just because it's the right thing to do may come back 2-3-fold back on you later on in life. And I've been extremely blessed in that way.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Norman Roberts, a coach with 37 years in the profession, a former Division I head coach, and a member of the Assistant Coaches Hall of Fame. Coach Roberts' journey began as a player at Queens before moving into coaching at Archbishop Molloy High School and making assistant stops at Oral Roberts, Tulsa, Illinois, Kansas, and Florida. He served as a head coach at Queens and St. John's, gaining valuable experience leading programs at the Division I level. In this episode, we discuss his definition of a great assistant coach, how young coaches can leverage the Final Four and Summer Leagues to build relationships, and the biggest challenges he faced running a program and what he would have done differently in today's basketball society. Please welcome to the podcast, Norman Roberts.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome back, coaches. Thanks everybody again for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. Your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo here today, chopping it up with a former head coach, someone who has a lot of experience in the realm of basketball, can learn a lot from. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Norman Roberts. Coach Roberts, welcome.
Welcome. Hey, thanks, guys, man. I appreciate it. I'm excited.
Yeah, us too, man. It's great to see you again, too, by the way. Appreciate you doing this.
Thank you, buddy.
Especially with you, you have been, as I mentioned, you've been in the industry for some time. And I say that, obviously, everybody always likes to, oh, yeah, don't call. We're not trying to call you out on it, but it's obviously a good thing that you have the experiences. You've been a head coach at, as you said, before we hopped on here, we were talking St. John's, but then I know you've been over at Queens also. You were a player there. You have a lot of great experiences as an assistant coach. But just really ultimately going back to the roots, as we always like to do, and just you grew up in Queens, played at Queens, coached there early in your career. Like, you have your roots in one area. And what did that really teach you about the game, about leadership, just growing up in Queens, ultimately being there, and then being able to coach there later on? Was there anything that, like, having your roots there helped you learn about the game early as a leader?
Well, a lot. I learned a lot there. And what is, I always talk to people about what eras do you grow up in? And I grew up, obviously, in the 70s and 80s and 90s, I guess you could say a little bit. But growing up in the 80s in New York was unbelievable. It's unbelievable from a basketball standpoint, from a music standpoint, from all those things. It was just a great time to grow up. And at that time in Queens, basketball in New York City was at an all-time high. And I like to tell people I came out the year of the point guard in New York, and that was Pearl Washington and Kenny Smith, and Mark Jackson, Kenny Hutchinson, and the guys that were behind us was the Rod Stricklands and those guys. And it's amazing time. And when you played, I played in the public school system, played for Springfield Gardens High School. When you played in Queens or you played in New York, it was a battle every night. It wasn't guys going to prep schools or going to different zoning schools. No, you went to your zone school where you lived. That's where you went to school. And we ended up that year in 83, we ended up winning a city championship. And to win the city championship in New York is ridiculous. It is the hardest thing to do back in those days. Like, the state championship, it almost didn't mean anything. You win that city, that means you were the best in those boroughs, those five boroughs, you were the best for that period of time. And we ended up winning the city championship, beating Alexander Hamilton, a legendary coach, Ray Haskins. And we beat a guy named Eddie Davender, who was a great player at Kentucky. His nickname was Bug Eye. And they had upset Pearl Washington and Elmer Anderson in the semifinals. And that year, we upset to go to that city championship. We upset Andrew Jackson High School, which had Boo Harvey, Ron Edwards, Ron Carnegie. They had three All-Americans on their team. And we upset them and ended up winning the city championship. So that was a great time, a great time. And then at those times, now the way things are, I probably would have definitely went on to play Division I and that type of stuff, but that wasn't happening at those times because you weren't, the recruiting wasn't the same. And I think Kenny Smith's told stories that he didn't get scholarship offers till late in his junior year, that he got scholarship offers to go to Carolina and those places. At that time, you went to where you had a scholarship, and I had a scholarship to Queens College. Got a great education there. The CUNY school system is unbelievable. I brag about it all the time, no matter where I've been in the country. I did actually go to some real classes, taking biomechanics and kinesiology and this type stuff. And so we didn't have study halls and that type stuff. You just went in a room and did what you had to do. I really enjoyed my time there. And then I came back and I coached there, and I shouldn't have been the coach there, to be honest with you. I was coaching in high school. I was coaching at Malloy High School with a legendary coach, Jack Curran, who's one of my biggest mentors and a great man. And I actually had a chance of coaching Kenny Anderson his senior year in high school, which he was one of the most unbelievable high school players I've ever seen. We played against Christ the King, who had Khalid Reeves, Derek Phelps went to North Carolina, Khalid Reeves went to Arizona, on their team, and a bunch of other guys, Carl Beckett that went to St. John's. They had an unbelievable team, and they were beating everybody by 40. And they beat us by 30, but Kenny Anderson had 46. They couldn't stop him. He was an unbelievable player. So I then went on and coached at Queens because my coach retired. I was a good player there. They wanted to try to bring me back. So I came back to coach. But when I came back to coach, I was 20. I might have been 26 years old. And the guys I was coaching in Division II, you got guys on your team like it is now in Division I. You got guys on your team that are 23, 22. Right. You know, I might have been dating their girlfriends like three months ago. And I'm coaching the team, and I really wasn't ready for that. But I enjoyed my time there. I did learn this, what a school can do with you. I was the academic advisor. I was the director of the camp. I was the head basketball coach. I had three jobs. And believe me, they only paid me for one. And I had three jobs working there. And it was unbelievable the amount of work you had to put in into that program. But it also taught me that, hey, something before games, I had to sweep the floor. I had to mop it down. I had to set up the clock. I had to do all those things in high school, as well as do that in Division II, because at that time we didn't have that many workers. So it also humbles you so you know where you're coming from. And when you do get to be where I've been after that, you're very humbled and happy that you had that background to set you up and everything. But Queens was a great place. I met a lot of great people there. The people have been so good to me there. And then coming back to St. John's was awesome as well.
Man. You hit on something that we talked to coaches, and Doug and I try to actually promote that on this pod about no job being too small, especially when you're a GA or a young hustler. And those are typically sometimes the guys that want to know, how can I get to the Big East in 2 days?
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes you got to just say, hey, look, just be where your feet are. And we preach that all the time. But who nudged you with coaching? You got pulled into it, it sounds like, with Queens. Mm-hmm. But what stuck with you after that to make you continue to want to do it? Because it very well could have been, you know what, this is great. I appreciate y'all, Queens, but I'm going to move on and do something else. What was it, someone that nudged you to stick with it? Or was that something while you were there at Queens that kind of said, you know what, I like this? What kind of kept you to encourage you to stay with it?
Everybody has their own path. And the crazy thing for me is I was at Archbishop Malloy High School. coaching the freshman team. I coached Shandu McNeil and some great players there. And I'm coaching there, but I'm helping the varsity. So with that, I had Kenny Anderson as a senior. So I have all these college coaches coming in to see Kenny. The Georgia Techs, the Georgetowns, the Kentucky, everybody come and see Kenny. And all those assistant coaches and head coaches come in and they see me, young black guy. Kenny likes me. We're friends to this day. I actually talked to him a couple of weeks ago. And they're going, hey, whatever helps us get in with Kenny, we're going to do. Mm. So all of a sudden, they're being really nice to me. And hey, sure. Coach, how you doing? Coach Rob, all this stuff. And they're saying to me, hey, man, you'd be good in this business. Why don't you get in the college? You'd be great. You're awesome. So I start listening to it and saying, okay, I got you and everything and that stuff. And I'm waving to my wife, guys. And
you better.
Married. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you better. That's right. You better.
Exactly. So, and they're telling me that you'd be good in it. So that's pushed me that way, getting into it. And then when I was at Queens, we weren't very good. My last year, we were probably going to have the most talent we've had and have a chance. We played in a great Division II league at that time, Philadelphia Textile, CW Post, St. Rose College. They were all great. They were all NCAA tournament teams, and we really weren't at that level. So those guys, I was at Queens, and I was getting ready to say to myself, just like you said, Alan, I was getting ready to say, you know something? I had gotten a job offer at St. Francis Prep High School to be in their health and phys ed department. And they were also going to say to me, you could still be the head coach on a part-time basis at Queens College. So I'd still be able to get to practice by 2 o'clock every day so I can have the best of both worlds. And so me and my wife just got married, just had a little boy. And I'm saying to myself, you know something, stability, security. The guy that told me that was the head of the whole department. He said, Norm, you're my guy. I'll make sure you get tenure at the school. And that's unbelievable. That's unbelievable security.
Yeah, that's nice.
And so I'm saying to myself, ooh, how do I turn this down? And then I had a buddy named Bill Pope, who works for the Orlando Magic right now. He's a scout. He was a manager at Kansas. And he knew Bill Self just got the job, or he's maybe into his third year, at Oral Roberts University. And he says to me, hey, Norm, I think I can get you an interview with Bill Self at Oral Roberts University. I think he'll hire you. And I said, why is a guy from Oklahoma going to hire a guy from Queens, New York? And he goes, no, you know him. I said, how do I know him? He said, at that time, those summers when I played at Queens College, my brother went to Kansas as a student. My brother was like a student manager with the team and then / volunteer coach when Bob Hill and Ted Owens and those guys were there. My brother used to work all the Kansas basketball camps in the summer. And Alan, you know how those camps were used
yes.
in the summer. College campuses for you. That's where all the college players would go to 100%. Work, make some money, and then play ball and stay in shape.
Absolutely.
So for two straight summers, I would go to the Kansas basketball camp. And me and my younger brother would go and work the camp. We work as counselors, and then we play at night and work out and drink beer and have fun and all that good stuff. So we did that, and Larry Brown took over for Ted Owens. My brother asked Larry Brown, could my two brothers come? And Larry said, yeah, New York City, because Larry's a New York guy. He said, yeah, tell them both they can come. So we come to camp and we work the camp. So I'm at the camp when Danny Manning and all those guys are there, that great 86 team and that type of stuff. And they, right, those guys, I'm there at the camp with those guys. And let me tell you something. Those camps were unreal with the amount of talent that was at the camp. Vincent Askew, Quinn Snyder, Ranzino Smith, Kansas, and Larry would actually bring back the Pacers group with George Irvine, who used to be the general manager and coach of the Pacers back in the day.
Yeah,
they would have a little mini training camp at the camp.
Oh my God. They would come.
So believe it or not, those pickup games at night after camp at 10 o'clock at night were unreal. They were unreal.
That's crazy.
Like, you would literally, I got on the court a little bit, but you would get on the court and the game would be seven. That sucker be over in 6 minutes.
That's
because
it.
Because if you didn't guard, they were going to make every shot. They were pros. They were great. And you played so hard. So I was there at that time. Mm. Bill Self was there too, but he was older than me, 2 years older than me. He was hanging out with the R.C. Bufords, the Larry Browns, those guys. And I was hanging out with the Cedric Hunters, the Danny Mannings, the players. So Bill Pope was in between us because he was a manager. So he says to me, you know each other. Remember when we went out to this club? Bill was in that corner, you in that corner. Remember when this happened? Bill was on the left-hand side, you on the right-hand side. I said, you got to be kidding me. So then I get on the phone, Bill calls me, and I got to make this decision in 2 days. So the guys at St. Francis Prep have to hear, and then I'm getting a call from Bill. He says he's going to call me at 12 noon. And Queens College, I tell them what's going on. They're such good people. They say, wait a minute, don't do anything. So I go, and I'm young. I call my dad, and I say to my dad, hey, Dad, I've seen on TV and stuff, you can look at other jobs and not get fired. Like, they can't fire me at Queens College for looking at another job. And he goes, no, they wouldn't do that, all this stuff. So I said, okay. My AD comes back from speaking to the president of school, and they offer me $20,000 more to stay. So I'm like, wow, God, you guys like me. So I said, okay. So then I say, Bill Self's going to call me at 12. So I get on the phone with Bill. We talk, boom, everything. And Bill was great. And then Bill said, listen, this is the situation. I offered the job to two guys. They didn't take them. One guy I brought in doesn't fit. I want to bring you out. I want to fly you out here on Friday. And this is like on Thursday or Wednesday. So I'm saying to myself, what is going on? I got to make this decision. So coach, I go and I speak to my wife, who is obviously the smartest one in the family. And she says to me, she says, okay, Queens College offers you $20,000 more. I said, yeah. She said, wow, honey, now we're going to be making $50,000 a year. She goes, they're out. Come on. You can't stay at Queens College. We're not getting it better. It doesn't help the family that much. We're still going to live in a one-bedroom apartment. It doesn't do much. I said, okay. So then she says, now that St. Francis Prep gig, now that's nice. You'd be making about $30,000 more. You could still be the coach of Queens College. You could still do that. So you can have the best of both worlds. And then she says to me, but I know you. I'm looking at you. You want to try that thing. You want to see if you can do it. And I said, yeah, I think I do. And she said, I think you should go on the interview. And I think the other two people will wait because they want to keep you. You should go.
Of course they will. Yeah.
And I said, okay. So I go on the interview. I'm there with Bill. We talk. And I'm there for about an hour, 2 hours, we go to lunch. And when you go from the East Coast to the Midwest, it's unbelievable. You think these guys eat all day. That's all they do is eat. And that stuff. And these dudes are taking me to barbecue joints and I'm eating ribs and all this stuff. And by 2 o'clock, I'm sleepy. I want to take a friggin' nap.
Right.
And so I get in the office with him. He opens up his board, his marker board, and says to me, here's the job. And here's how much we can pay you. We'll help you with living expenses. I want to hire you. So I called my wife. I said, honey, they want to hire me. I think I got the job. And she says, then we're going to Tulsa. And we had no idea what Tulsa, Oklahoma was. We had no idea about Oral Roberts University, all those things. But I will tell you, Going to Oral Roberts was one of the best things I ever did in my life. It was awesome being there. I'm Catholic. Okay. Obviously, that's a Christian type school and very religious school. I'll tell you another quick story. It's just because it's funny.
No, let it rip. This is.
I had to talk President Roberts. Oral Roberts was no longer the chancellor, or that's that. His son was. And President Roberts, coach said, Norm, you have to talk to President Roberts. He's going to want to speak to you. So I'm going, oh my God, it's a TV evangelist, all that type of stuff. I'm going, you got to be kidding me. I said, so right away, I get home and I'm like, honey, get the Bible. Let's start trying to read some stuff. If this guy hits me with something, maybe I can be ready for it or whatever. And so I get on the phone, President Roberts calls me. And he says, Norman, how are you? And I said, how you doing, President Roberts? I'm so excited and everything. And he said, I'm excited about you coming too. Bill tells me great things about you. So I said, okay. So then he says, I got one question for you. And I said, oh, man. So I got the Bible. I got it right next to me.
Right.
And he says, Norm, do you accept the Lord, God, as your Lord and Savior? Do you accept him? Do you believe in him? And I said, I do. And he said, welcome to Oral Roberts. And I was like, oh my God. I said, thank you, President Roberts. And I went there and I met some of the best people there who I'm friends with, close friends with, and family to this day. Coach found his starting point guard in a Subway sandwich place, found his starting point guard, who is unbelievable pastor now, has his own church in Austin, Texas. The guy was phenomenal. His name was Earl McClellan. Phenomenal. He walks up to Coach. He was a walk-on. Walks up to Coach and says to him, I'm going to be your starting point guard. The Lord spoke to me and said, I'm the one that's going to lead this team. And he did. We beat Oklahoma State, Arkansas, Texas Tech took them to the wire when they had the great team that played against Carolina, took them to the wire. Unbelievable. We won our last, his junior year, we were 18-9. And our, I think his senior year, we were 21-7. Ended up playing Notre Dame. And we were independent. Ended up playing Notre Dame in the NIT. The guy was a phenomenal leader. Phenomenal leader. Really good player, but phenomenal leader. But how about that? That he finds his point guard in a Subway sandwich place. It's incredible.
I've actually been to that Subway when I used to go to Jerry Mullins. Yeah, right across the street. Jerry Mullins used to hold his JUCO camp there. I've been in that Subway before. But what a story, man.
Maybe it's not a bad thing that all those maybe it's not a bad thing all those people on the West Coast are eating so much because that's where they're finding their point guards now.
Maybe I need to look for one out here. Maybe we find some positional size. We need to get a little bigger on the perimeter. But what I love about what you said is like that coaches in this profession, one of the things we tell young guys is there's a point where you do have to take a shot. You can say that you want to do it. You can say, I want to advance. I want to grow. I want to coach at this level. If you're a GA or second year, third year, fifth year coach, and you're rising, as we like to say it, but there are times where you have to take a shot without knowing how it's going to turn out, and what not knowing exactly what's on the other side of it. And talk about some moments of truth that you just had right there, like between St. Francis and Queens and Oral Roberts. And I'm so glad you shared that, because that's the essence of what young coaches need to hear. Is that, and the foundation of it all was relationships. Yes. Really, you end up being a relationship that you didn't even know you had.
You had
to get reminded of it.
Good to people for no reason but being good to people can help you so much in life, business, anything that you do. You may not know reaching out a hand to someone just because it's the right thing to do may come back 2-3-fold. Back on you later on in life. And I've been extremely blessed in that way.
That's the most impressive thing too, I have to say, is it's been roughly 37 years you've been in the industry, And for a majority of those, as you said in the beginning, you went to Oral Roberts. I think it was 1995, I believe, when you started at Oral Roberts. Mm-hmm. Tulsa, Illinois, Kansas, and all of these were spots that you were alongside Bill Self. And that relationship, that story that you just said, and it shows the progression of your path all with the same person. I think that's one of those things that I don't want to say it's a lost art now, but maybe more not as found, as common, is that someone sticks with one person throughout. And it definitely says a lot about who you were as a person. It says a lot about who you are as a coach. And not even to mention, I know I saw something that you were inducted into the Assistant Coaches Hall of Fame also in 2022. So like off of that, it shows that you had not only put in the work with that head coach, you've shown that you can move up the ranks, but then also you were glorified across the whole nation through all the assistant coaches. So I guess for a full synopsis of all of that, like what would you say is your definition of being a great assistant coach, not only to achieve that Hall of Fame status that you did, all of these great stops and follow such a phenomenal coach in Bill Self, but then like just a whole case, what would you say is the best way for an assistant to help their head coach and be the best assistant possible?
I would say I probably would, it's big, but encompassing it in one word would be loyalty, would be the biggest word. Understanding that when you're working with somebody, a group of people, there has to be a loyalty, there has to be a commitment, there has to be an understanding that in order for us to do something great, we've all got to be on the same page. We've all got to have our feet in the same circle. No one, and this is something that Coach Self preaches all the time, no one is bigger than the program. No one's bigger than the whole. And those things I learned. I had an opportunity to actually leave Coach Self and take a higher level job on two occasions. One, I'm at Tulsa. We've had a great year. We've been tremendous. We were 32-5 and ended up losing. Like we were Gonzaga before Gonzaga. We were VCU before VCU. At Tulsa, we were that. And I had a chance to go to Notre Dame. And I was about to go there and they called me and they said, "Hey, Norm, you're from New York." Matt Doherty was coach. "Norm, you're from New York. You're Catholic. You got to love," and I do. The history of Notre Dame basketball, the Kelly Tripucas, David Rivers, Lando Rule. I love Notre Dame basketball.
Yeah.
What Matt Doherty didn't know, and I'm putting this out there, no one's really ever heard this story, is Matt Doherty did not know that I'm a huge, believe it or not, from New York, I'm a huge USC football fan. Tailback you, Ricky Bell, Charles White, Marcus Allen. I love USC football. Pat Hayden, the whole deal. Robinson, the whole deal. Len Swan, I love USC football. Notre Dame is our arch rival. We hate Notre Dame football. And that's how I was. But when I come on the interview, Matt picks me up from the airport. We're driving in South Bend. And as we're driving in, Matt, as we're getting in the campus, Matt says, "Norm, look up there." And we're going by the football stadium. And he says, "Look up there. There's Touchdown Jesus." He says, "If you don't feel it in your heart, you'll never feel it." And I didn't feel one thing in my heart. I couldn't do it. It may be the dumbest thing in life. That might have been the dumbest decision. I was like, "No, I don't feel it. I'm not going there." And I had such a good relationship with Coach. Obviously, we were going to be good again the following year, and we went to the Elite Eight the following year. I didn't want to leave. And so I ended up staying. The second time I could have left was with, believe it or not, Kelvin Sampson, Oklahoma. Kelvin Sampson is a great coach. I will tell you this, that sucker, especially in his younger days, was an unbelievable recruiter. Now, I just told you, I played Division II, all that type of stuff, not highly recruited guy, the whole deal. So I had never been recruited. That dude was recruiting me to come to Oklahoma. And this dude is like calling me like three times a day. Like, hey, bud, hey, you need to, hey, come on now. And I'm like, God. And my wife's, look at you. I'm like, God, this guy must really want me to come down there. And he recruited me hard. It was, you know, for a 5-day period or 3-day period, whatever it was, recruited me hard. But then Coach Self recruited me too, saying, hey, bud, we got some unfinished business. We got to do this thing, all that type of stuff. But he never told me not to go and try to reach higher. He never told me not to do that. He said, Norm, I understand. I totally understand. More money, more prestige, maybe closer to getting you to be a head coach and that type of stuff. He understood all that stuff. But our families were so tight. My wife and his wife are best friends to this day. They talk to each other at least 3 times a day. My relationship with him, our relationship with the staff and the people, I just thought for me, and I see, and Alan, you were talking about this, other guys jump, 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 want to move, move. And I always tell young coaches, be careful moving. Be careful jumping and moving, because you may jump right into a situation that's awful, that you may jump into a situation that jumps you right out of the business and that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I would say loyalty is so important. Giving the same message is very important. Players have to hear the same message, because Alan knows this and other assistant coaches know this. Players will try, when things aren't going well for them, they will find or try to find someone to voice their opinion to and hope that they hear what they want to hear. So you have to make sure you stay in line with what the head coach said. And you may not totally agree. Now, when you're in the meetings with coach, now try to talk it out with coach. Maybe we could try this, coach. Or I think the kid's this good, whatever. But when that kid comes to you, no, you turn it over too much. No, you're not guarding the way coach wants you to guard. No, this is how we're going to play. This is our culture. This is what we do. That it has to be straight in line with your head coach. And to this point, I will tell you this. I was extremely fortunate at St. John's as a head coach to have a staff, Chuck Martin, Fred Quarterbaum, Chris Casey, Glenn Breaker, Billy Singleton. Those guys were as loyal as can be. Kamani, who's at UConn right now, as loyal as Oz Cross. They were as loyal as can be. Those guys, and in New York, ooh, buddy, it's hard to be loyal. Right. It's hard, very hard. And those guys were loyal as can be. So I would say loyalty, staying in line, same message, working your tail off, understanding that, hey, man, if a floor needs to be swept, if someone needs to go pick up a recruit, if you need to be up in the office, and this is the other thing for young coaches, understand there's a lot of work that has to be done. If your coach wants to be up in the office till 10, 11 o'clock at night, damn sure you're up there to 10, 11 o'clock at night. And hey, tell mama, there's plenty of nights my wife wanted me to be home. She understood.
Yeah.
She understood. I'm not coming home until the big fella goes home. And you have to understand that. And you got to put in the time, work, and the effort and show people that you're willing to do whatever it takes. And when you do that, then you can be a really good assistant. But this is something, too, I tell young assistants, and it happens. In the summer times, Alan knows this, we'll sit there in the summer, and guys are all talking. Everybody's chattering, you know, what's going on, team, whatever. And as you move up in this business, and this is really, this is fun. When I was in Division II, I would go to the Final Four. At that time, when you get to the Final Four, only Division II guys would speak to you, and only maybe low Division I guys. Hey, Norm, what's happening? Hey, how you doing? Then I go to Oral Roberts. Then the low major guys would talk to you. Sprinkle in some mid-major cats would talk to you. Hey, Norm, what's happening, man? I see you're moving. All that stuff. Then I go from Tulsa, when we were great, 32-8, play Duke and all that stuff. And then I'm getting ready to move to Illinois. But before I even moved there, but when I got to Illinois, all of a sudden now, high major cats are like, Norm, what's up, fella? What's up, big boy? How you doing? All of a sudden, there's like a pecking order as you move. And then when you get to Illinois, in those places, in Kansas, then it's, what's up? What's up? Hey, baby. Hey, keep me in mind. Keep me in mind. I know what's coming for you. I know you're getting 100%. Ready to get more. Or because now you they think you're going to be a head coach because Dickie V says your name on TV, whatever. And that's up. I always remembered that. And what I would do at Final Four is, anybody that knows me will tell you this about me. Anytime I would go to the Final Four, I would talk to JUCO guys. I talked to high school guys. I would talk to Division One guys, low Division One, mid majors, high majors. It did not. I would be in a circle with five high major guys talking, chit chat. And I'd see my JUCO brethren over from New York, and they would have their corner over there. I'd go over there and I'd be over there for 30 minutes hanging out with them. And they would look at me like, damn, no one came over and hung out. I did. Because to me, that was important, because I was the same guy at Division II that I was at Oral Roberts. I was the same guy at Oral Roberts that I was at Tulsa. I was the same guy at Tulsa that was at Illinois. I was the same guy at Illinois that was at Kansas. The same guy. And I'm the same guy that was at Illinois, Kansas, then was the head coach at St. John's. It did not matter. And I wanted people to definitely see that and know that, that I didn't get too big, that I could just brush away people that helped me on the rung getting up. Because I tell people this all the time too. Be careful of all the pats on the back you get. Of course, it's only going to be harder when you get all the kick in the asses when you drop. When you drop and people remember that you left them when you went up higher, man, those kick in the asses really hurt. They really hurt on the way down. And that's it. So I tried to stay where my feet are, and I tried to make sure people knew that you helped me. I remember you. I got to try to lift you up and help you move on like I did. I always thought that was tremendously important.
You just threw, and I love it, you just threw an absolute hand grenade into something that's so prevalent in our business, is the, and you go to every Final Four to this day, and you still see it, right? You're in the, whether it's in the convention hall or it's at a social, it's the very thing that you're talking about. And coaches can't hear that enough. I'm so glad you said it. It's one of those things that people, it's like the things we think but do not say. You know, it's there. We know that's the elephant in the room at every Final Four, is this sizing up game that's going on, logo checking.
Yes.
We see it all the time, but I'm so glad you just threw a hand grenade right into it, because especially now with our business being so transactional and the relationship thing is changing, it's becoming more, I don't know. Yeah. And the fact that you said that, if that affects one coach listening to this, it'll be worth it. So that's a home run you just hit right there.
I feel like that's the most, I shouldn't say, it's for people who go to the Final Fours to try and make connections. A lot of times, if you're at the lower levels, it is harder for people, I feel, to be able to make those connections. So it's great to be able to already know them. But what would you say it would be like, and I guess I'm just thinking in terms of maybe those other coaches who were at the lower, I don't want to say lower positions, but managers, GAs, stuff like that, that are trying to meet people. Like, how would you say nowadays, because running the camps, how you mentioned at the very beginning, there are still camps, but I know there's a lot of schools that don't run them, or they are a lot more secluded with who they let in to run them. So yes, it's still prevalent, but at the same point, it's probably a little bit harder to get into those. Would there be any ways for those people to be able to make those connections at the events, you think?
There is, but it's much harder. There's a ton of socials that they try to do to allow those guys to come in. I think it's up to us as older coaches, guys that are in business, to allow those guys to come in. So in terms of if a young fella comes up to me and starts, hey, coach, how you doing? Because I went from young cat to what's up, G? What's up to OG? When they come to you and sit down with them, talk to them for a little bit, hear their story, give them some information, some tidbits, be honest with them. It is harder because the NCAA made rules that don't allow guys to do camps like they used to. And if you're connected to a player, you can't hire the person for 2 years or whatever it is. So it has made it harder. But anytime they can do clinics, I tell them go to clinics, talk to those people, get involved. But it is much harder to get into the business. But I do think it's up to coaches that are in the business to hear these guys' stories, help them remember where you came from. Remember how you got there. Everybody has a different path, but remember where you came from. And it is our job as older coaches and people in the business to uplift those other guys. Now I do understand this too. If you've been in the business 10 years or 5 years, you're worried about staying in the business. There's a portion of that. So you don't want that cat taking your job. And I understand that, but still, we also still got to try to help each other. We got to try to help each other and mentor those guys. But I think there is still some things, but it's more like through socials and stuff like that. The NCAA tries to put on a different agencies put on, because now you go to Final Four, it's all about the agencies, different agents putting on little socials and stuff so you can meet people, talk, connect. And that's because now the business is all about talking to agents. That's what's being done at the Final Four now. When I was in the business last year or the last couple of years, coaches, hey, man, when you get there, make sure you meet with these agents, man. Meet with them. You got to sit down and talk with these guys, build a relationship and all that stuff, because that's what it's come down to. It really has.
No, they're the pipeline to the players now. There's no question. Yes.
No question. Believe me, that agent pipeline stuff, after January 1st and probably even before, that stuff starts heating up now for the portal. For the portal right now, that stuff is starting to heat up right now on low major or mid major guys that are playing good and everything. You even see it now on Twitter and stuff. When did you ever see people just putting things on Twitter about a mid major guy averaging 20 points a game? They're doing that so that you read it so that, hey, man, check that kid out at Merrimack or check that kid at, you know, where Hofstra, check that kid out. And now, boom, he's on your portal list. Hey, find out who his agent is. Boom. And those agents, you go to games now, there's more agents sitting there sometimes than parents. They're sitting there. That's who you got to go. When you're coming out of the tunnel, you used to have to communicate with parents all the time. No, right. You're communicating with parents and the agent when you're coming out. That has to happen.
100%.
I'm sure that's probably a pro and a con, because yeah, it's probably better to talk to an agent to an extent, because then the parent, at least they're a little bit more familiar with the industry. Sometimes some parents don't necessarily know much about the industry, so they don't really know how to guide their kid, but an agent would. But then at the same point, agents are going to be a little more strong-armed with specific things, trying to get certain kids when they already have those kids. I don't know. Is that a good or bad thing that it's now more agents than parents, you think?
I would say this. It's the nature of the business. I don't know if you say if it's good or bad or whatever. The business, the college basketball has changed. It's never going to go back. Dealing with the agents now is something you have to do. And to be honest with you, sometimes it's good. It's fun. You are building relationships with those guys. I think the tough thing, and this is just my opinion, I think the tough thing is, and it's going to change as everything evolves, the tough thing is those agents, for the most part, they know what they're doing now. Coaches, we're coaches. We ain't agents. You know what I'm saying? So they know the gift of gab. They know what to say, all that type of stuff. Whereas coaches, I'm just trying to win that next game, man. That's it. And sometimes you can get caught up. But I think it's important now. You have to build those relationships. You have to reach out. Those guys are going to reach out to you too. But it is the nature of the business, man. There's a lot of money being paid. I was on another show talking about that. And where comes that is comes a ton of criticism, rhetoric, and all that type of stuff that's going on now. And kids, players, there are some that are kids. But you know, gosh, with the influx of European players and us, we got 22, 23-year-old men. At 20, I got married at 25. You know what I'm saying? I had my first kid at 25. I think you guys heard Calipari making that funny comment, which was absolutely ridiculously funny when he talked about he's looking up in the stands and one of the guys playing on the other team, he's got two kids in the stands. And he goes, and the guy's waving to his two kids in the stands. He's playing college basketball. And then he said, here's the kicker. He's using this NIL money to pay the alimony to his first wife. And it's ridiculous. It's
wild.
It's so funny. But in some ways, it's somewhat true too.
Yeah.
We've changed, man. And you know what? To say that pushed me out of coaching, no. But I am old school. I enjoyed the development piece. I enjoyed the getting to know families. I enjoyed a guy going from freshman to sophomore to junior to senior. I enjoyed senior days, kids crying, grown men crying, saying, you changed my life, you helped me, that type of stuff. Those days are gone. They're never coming back. Never coming back. So
that's a good point. You got to adapt. Going back to your answer to the previous question, you got to adapt. And the whole looking at everything you just said, you got to adapt. If you don't adapt, you're going to fall behind. And if you fall behind, you're behind the eight ball at that point.
Yes.
Coach, we appreciate it for you getting on here, talk some more hoops. I know you got a lot going on. So definitely great to be able to, one, connect with you, meet you, hear your stories, because I know we could probably go on for hours with this, because I'm sure you
have. I am a storyteller, guys. I'm sorry about that. I am.
No,
I
do. That's what we love, man. But like, listen, we had Nate McMillan on here, and we had to break his into two episodes because he got on such a roll. Doug and I joke about this all the time. There's so many podcasts out there now, and a lot of them are probably a little bit more basketball X's and O, which Doug and I joke about it. You can get X's and O's anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get the stories that you shared today. You can't get that anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we feel our thing is a little bit different, because this business is rooted in relationships. It's rooted in experiences, highs and lows. It's rooted in storytelling. Because storytelling is what is part of what connects us. And so you can't get that everywhere. You can go get a ghost flare action anywhere. Just get on Instagram. You can be on Instagram all day and get your whole playbook. But you can't get the stuff, the golden stuff that you shared today from your own experiences to your relationship with Coach Self, to the trajectory of your journey, to what you said about coaches, just we can be better at Final Fours, mm-hmm. and things, mm-hmm. like that. We can be better at that. That's real.
Yeah.
You can't get that. You can't get that anywhere. That's why we try to continue to distinguish ourselves a little bit. And so storytelling's a big part of this pod. And man, this has been so good. So
yeah.
I know Dougie's about to land the plane, but this has been awesome, man. For me, selfishly, it's just great to see you again, but also it's just been great to just chop it up about our profession with you, man. This has been awesome.
Appreciate it.
And don't be surprised that when you go to Indianapolis, if you're going to Indianapolis this upcoming year for the Final Four, you're probably going to get a lot of people flocking to you now that you said you want to go and have conversation with everybody. I'm sure there's going to be, where's Coach Roberts at? Everybody's going to be looking around for you.
I'll enjoy it. I'll enjoy it. My wife's sick of hearing this, so I'll enjoy it.
Love it.
No, we definitely appreciate you for being on here, sharing your stories. And it's great to be able to meet you and be able to hear your side of things. some point, I'm sure, heck, we'd even be able to love to hear about the head coaching side too, your time at St. John's and progressing from there, what you learned from those experiences. But again, thank you very much. And for everybody out there, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, all you coaches, keep working, keep rising. We'll see you all soon. Have a great rest of the year.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.